And good morning, good morning. Thank you so much for joining us this morning for Coffee with the Coder, episode 58. We're on the live call now. Those of you who are just now dialing in, if you want to be an insider, dial in 10 minutes early. So we're delighted that you've joined us just now, and you can always listen to the replay on Facebook or on our website in a couple of hours after the call ends. So just before we get started, and I should say hi, Paula.
Good morning. Good morning, Pam.
I want to remind everybody that there is a webinar coming this Thursday, noon Eastern, and the topic is lower GI with ICD-10. If that's something that you address in your world, then you might want to sign up for that one. And we are having a sale. We have annual subscribers who the organization is the subscriber, and so all the people that belong to that organization don't have to pay for webinars. You can just come to all of them. But those of you who are not one of those, then there's a fee. And so we have created a spring special, and that will also apply to this coming up webinar. So it's only going to be $99 instead of the normal price of $225. And plus, you get the replay without any additional charge. So look at the website, aq-iq.com, and look at that spring special, which I think is right close to the top of the front page. If it isn't, it will be in an hour. And delighted that you could join us for that. We do have Revenue Warriors opening up soon, and I'm going to ask Paula for like 10 seconds on that in just a moment. And also our Pro Labs is coming up soon. I don't actually have the date right this moment, but let's see what we can find out. Can you give me like 10 seconds on Revenue Warriors, Paula?
Yes, I'm in the holding pattern right now, but I'm anticipating this is opening very soon, like in the next month. We just love, you know, talking with the folks in the Revenue Warrior Group. This is like it's a membership. It's very low cost. You have access, direct access to us, the consultants. We're going to teach you stuff. We're going to bring lots of interviews of, you know, other people in the industry, just to kind of help you get your headset around things in your own organization. And we're going to be there, you know, one-to-one to help you in, you know, lots of situations. So it's like having a consultant in your pocket, I'd say. That's a really cool thing there.
It's wonderful. I'm getting lots of positive feedback. Okay, so the last thing, we'd like to have some more questions. We've got some lovely questions today, insightful, and Paul's going to address them in just a few seconds. But do hop over to aq-iq.com, look under the Ask in the white and blue bar where it says Ask Us, and there's Coffee with the Coder drop down. Send us a question. We just love questions. We want to have way more than we can deal with, and so please do that. So let me pop into the first one. This one is from an insider, so she popped up or closer to the top of the list, and it's from Angie. And I believe Angie has also been a previous winner. But anyway, she's got this wonderful question here. She says, I have a patient that has been referred for admission, so she's in an inpatient rehab. I do not have muscle strength documented in the last 2 weeks, but they were all 1 to 2/5 at that point. The patient came in with angioedema and was in critical care on a vent for 16 days. He'd been off the vent, and case management was looking for SNF placement because he was so weak. But he now has started to improve and actually walked with PT today, 80 feet, at Contact Guard Assist. Speech therapy signed off on Friday. OT has enlisted at MnMod Assist for all their treatments. All of that just to say, since it has been so long and he's obviously improving, can we still use critical illness myopathy as the admitting diagnosis? He's been in the hospital for 33 days.
Wow, okay, so... Yeah, great, Angie, for that question. Thank you. One of the things that sort of gets confused oftentimes is that, you know, if a condition is resolved, we think that because that is the rules on the claim form, the UB04, we can only report conditions that are active and present. But I think that that's where Angie was going with this question, is that on the IRFPI, the etiologic diagnosis can actually be resolved, but it can still have caused residuals that we are treating while the patient's in inpatient rehab. So just to reiterate for you, the etiologic diagnosis is the underlying condition that led to the impairment. Duration of how long the patient had the condition, that's not a qualifying factor. So it's just what caused the impairment. The condition, the etiologic, could still be present or it could be resolved. So if the physician agrees and documents it as the underlying cause and, of course, states the deficits associated to it, which it sounds like this patient absolutely had, it may be reported as the etiologic. So, yes.
Thank you. Thank you. That's a good point that we all need to remember. This next question is from Anonymous. And so you can tell us what kind of, I think this might be an inpatient rehab, but you can tell me when I read you the question. When we discussed bringing this patient in, we talked about bringing him in as other traumatic spinal cord dysfunction. The patient came and he wasn't showing a lot of spinal cord symptoms. Contusion is documented, tingling and numbness, the left hand was documented. For musculoskeletal, there's positive pain in the leg, muscle abrasions, numbness, tingling to the left hand in a sling. Then musculoskeletal also says left arm in a sling, multiple skin tears to right leg, sloughs, granulation tissues, multiple lacerations to head with staples. Neurologic says awake, alert, oriented times three, strength impaired, and I think this is more than one time. So left upper extremities 2 to 3 out of 5, hand grip 4 out of 5, wrist extremities 4 out of 5, proximally shoulder not tested due to injury, at least 4 to 5 in right upper extremity and bilateral lower extremity. I'm trying to read these letters here. Sensation impaired in left hand and forearm, and then there's another neurologic, awake, alert, oriented times 3, cranial nerves 2 to 12 intact, motor strength 5 to 5, found to have C5, C6, contusion of spinal cord.
Okay, so, yeah, this is another IRF question, Pam. I don't think that was identified on it. There was a lot in that question that caused me to ask questions myself. So it says that they were talking about bringing the patient in under traumatic spinal cord. Now, I did talk back and forth with the person who asked the question, because they were trying to get this out, more quickly, and we went back and forth on the email. So so that to let you know, there was a little back and forth. So my statement, first of all, there was some stuff with the head. We had staples on the head. So what was going on there? I'm asking the question. It wasn't quite clear in the question. So at the bottom line, if there are conditions or symptoms and deficits that exist that do not look like cord damage, then you're going to have to query the physician to provide you, can you clarify or talk with the physician, either one, can you clarify for me, where those cord deficits are, because you're trying to support the case and make sure it's reported correctly. If the only deficits that are there really are more neurologic, not related to central cord damage, of course, we've talked about this many times before, you're going to consider that patient more as an other neuro case, 3.9. But if it's more, let's say it's post-op surgery, let's say they had a lumbar laminectomy but this person had in the cervical area. So even if they had something in the cervical area and it was more about bracing that patient and getting them back to function, then you could also consider other orthopedic. Now, the interesting thing about going back and forth on this question is, in my mind, reading and listening to the question, it was more about the neurologic deficits. But as I asked questions back and forth, then the physician was queried, and the physician said, nope, this actually is an orthopedic case. It's not a neuro case. So there you have it, which was interesting because it's very difficult when we get, questions and we're not seeing the entire medical record. So in this case, just looking at what I saw, without the full record, I would go, oh, well, that looks more like a neuro case. But there obviously was something else that wasn't stated in the question. So there was two reasons I wanted to bring that question to you. It could have been something else, but at the end of the day, when we went back and forth and queried the physician, he said, yeah, maybe I was stating that and not as clear as I could, and it should have been an other ortho. Pam?
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's very helpful to get all the details. I'm going to come over to another insider submission. and this is Michelle, and I believe this is an office visit. She asks, when is it appropriate to ask a provider to code depression and anxiety as two separate conditions instead of one? So, for example, in the chart, the provider consistently has been using the ICD-10 code F1.8, other specified anxiety disorder. The office note says, in the HPI section, depression, mood has been staple. The assessment plan, F41.8, other specified anxiety disorder, chronic, anxiety is stable. Medication list includes Prozac, which is not linked to a diagnosis code. PHQ-2 was 0 at the time of the visit.
Okay. So, yeah, that first one, Pam, I think was supposed to be F41.8 as well. So,
okay.
Yeah, because you have to have a certain number of characters in order to have an ICD-10 code. So F41.8 is the one other specified anxiety disorder. So it sounds like the physician was very unclear on the documentation. So for the other callers, I'm going to go ahead and state, so, you know, with anxiety and depression, if the provider links the conditions in the documentation, you know, you can report that as, or you should report that as one condition. So it's dysthymic disorder. So if the provider does not link, for example, he states depression and then anxiety separately, or persistent anxiety, depression, and he doesn't really clarify that the two are associated, you're going to report those as two separate conditions. Now, the appropriate time to report or to query the physician, here I'm going to give you a couple of different answers because it's still going to come back to you to make the ultimate decision. I'll go ahead and give you that. When the providers are unclear, which your provider clearly was unclear, that was kind of interesting, clearly was unclear, in the question, you know, in the record, it was conflicting information back and forth, and you're like, which one is it? Are they associated or are they not associated? Then it is appropriate to query. However, as you know, if you're coding charts, you could actually query so many different things in a record that don't really have anything to do with reimbursement. Maybe they're just secondary codes and they're not going to impact the reimbursement, or maybe they will. It's going to be an organizational decision whether certain things are queried. So in this case, to me, if I want it to be accurate, I'm going to query. But it's most likely, depending on your setting, an office setting, it may not impact your reimbursement at this moment. Now, many of you probably know that we're going to those models where the physicians are getting paid more on the severity of illness. So getting more specific will help that severity of illness, in which case this would be an ultimate, you know, reason to go ahead and query. But in some situations, we have a whole bunch of secondary codes, and anxiety and depression, say, in the hospital setting, is put on a lot of accounts, and it's not the reason they're there, but maybe they just determine internally, unless it impacts reimbursement, they're not going to query. So that's going to be an internal decision as to when to query, but it would absolutely, in the case that you stated, be appropriate to query in that situation for clarity to determine, are they associated or are they not?
Thank you. It does often come down to an organizational decision, I believe.
Yeah.
I have one more. Can I sneak one more in? It looks kind of short.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is from another insider. So insiders do get preferential treatment. This is Ida, who we love and we get lots of questions from. And she says she's having issues with the ICD-10 code P, as in Paula, 05.9. Can we as coders document P05.0X? Or PO5.1X, if the documentation is there, the doctor only documents IUGR.
Okay, so, and for those of you who don't know, the IUGR is intrauterine growth restriction. And so the question was, you know, can we report the lower weight, basically, with the PO5.0X or the PO5.1X? And if the only thing the physician says is the intrauterine growth restriction, but does not clarify that at birth, you know, what that was, then the only option that you have is the P05.9. That is the one that you said you were having problems with. So I'm not quite sure what the problem is, but Ida, if you can let us know a little more, currently with the information that we have, if they're only stating IUGR, then you don't know if it was, if the patient, you know, the baby was a lightweight or an underweight. It sounds like a boxing class, right? Lightweight or underweight, in which case you can only report the unspecified, which is, again, P05.9.
Thank you, thank you. Okay, so I'm going to stir up these things on my desk. They're written down, the three names of the non-anonymous askers, and we're ready to give out a mug. We're going to mug someone today, and so let's find out who this person is. Angie, thank you so much for the question, Angie. Everyone, now, if you haven't, if you don't know what this is, every call we like to mug someone who is listening and ask a question, and so we do that by drawing names from the non-anonymous questioners, and so we will mail you our official Coffee with Decoder mug that you can send us your mugshot, which is a selfie of you and the mug. You can get on our Insiders Facebook page that way. And so we are so delighted that you joined us today and can't wait to share the next episode with you in 2 weeks, which will be March 11th. Thank you so much for being here today. Paula, do you have last words?
No, just, hey, happy spring, guys. I can't believe it's almost March.